And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to another mech-enhanced episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano Da Silva.
I'm Walter Vici.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback...
We love feedback!
We put out a quick poll last week asking the following question. If given the choice between Pacific Rim and Michael Bay's Transformers, which would you choose? Got a few responses.
Alright.
John Orsler, at JM Orsler, Pacific Rim, every day, all day. Tim Bartlett, at WB Lost Soul, Pacific Rim, Pacific Rim, Pacific Rim, Pacific...
And he trails off. I'm still only counting that as one.
Bored Nihilist, at Bored Nihilist, Pacific Rim, Gypsy Danger could step on Optimus Prime like a bug.
This is true, because considerably bigger.
Also, Pac Rim isn't just a blur like Transformers. HC Movie Reviews, at HC Movie Reviews, definitely Transformers. Looks better, and there is more exciting action, although I did enjoy Pacific Rim. And Jake Copley-Smith, at To Be Undecided, couldn't type that with a straight face, Pacific Rim.
All right, so by our little informal poll, we have a 4-1 margin of victory for Pacific Rim over Transformers.
Uh-huh, yes.
That satisfies my curiosity. I now will revise that. I thought it was more divisive, would be more divisive than that.
That's right.
So... thank you all for everyone who participated. Stay tuned for this week's poll question, whatever it may be.
Absolutely. In this episode, we will be discussing my most anticipated movie of the year, Elysium. But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own, and I will let Hermano go first.
Okay, first, I only watched two movies. The first one I watched was released on HBO this past Saturday, called Clear History, starring Larry David, John Hamm, Michael Keaton, a bunch of other people, a bunch of other comedians, Danny McBride, Bill Hader.
I saw a write-up on this in USA Today.
Yeah. I got to admit, I was a little disappointed. I'm not a big fan of...
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Well, obviously,
you're not.
I'm not a huge fan, but I have seen some episodes, and what I have seen, I really liked. I think they're genuinely funny.
Oh yeah, you need to go back and watch them.
I've never seen a full season all the way through, but what I have seen, whenever I happen to catch it, I've enjoyed the movie. However, it started off like it was going to be just like one long episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it just wasn't as funny. Like, I don't know if I'm just that far removed from the show, and, you know, it hasn't been on. I think the new season hasn't been, you know, the last season, I should say, ended a while ago. And just watching this movie, I didn't laugh. I mean, I think I laughed maybe once at something Danny McBride said, but other than that, I just didn't think it was very good. It just had so many people in it. It felt like it had so much potential, but I just found it funny. I mean, the premise is basically Larry David was he was like an ad guy, an ad exec at a car company run by John Hamm's character, and he doesn't agree with what John Hamm wants to name the car, and he is so strong in his opinion that he sells his shares of that he has invested in the company back to John Hamm. And the car blows up. Like, it's like $1 billion. If he would have made $1 billion if he had just stayed with the company. So he pretty much is in the public eye, and he's made a laughingstock of. Fast forward 10 years, he's living on Martha's Vineyard. This was all shot locally, by the way, in Boston and Martha's Vineyard and stuff like that. So he's living in Martha's Vineyard, just kind of trying to live out his life, and John Hamm kind of comes back into his life. He buys a house in Martha's Vineyard. So then, you know, all these comedy of errors, much like Curb Your Enthusiasm, start happening. But I just didn't think it was very funny. There were some cameos in here that I thought could have been so much better. What's the name of the guy who played Sabretooth most recently?
Oh, God.
Ray Stevens?
No. In the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
Well, I don't remember a goddamn thing from that movie.
Well, anyway, the guy that played Sabretooth, his Wolverine's little brother there, or whatever. He makes a cameo, and it's so could have been so good, and it just wasn't. And I don't know. I just felt like, I don't know, it was kind of a little bit of a disappointment. So I'll say meh on it. If you're a fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'd say check it out. It might do something for you, but for me, I just didn't think it held up as good as the show did. So next, I watched a movie I believe Tim saw from 2004. Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah. What made you watch this?
It was on TV. I'd never seen it, and I believe...
Was it on a movie channel?
Yes, oh, okay. It was on Encore, I believe, right. And I believe you said you liked it.
Yeah, I did, generally. It was all right.
Okay. I had never seen it. I guess it's based on a true story, based on a book, which was based on a true story, where a high school team... it's pretty much like superstars in this like Texas town, and it's just such a good examination of like what goes on in these like small towns where like football is pretty much like God.
If you've been to Texas during football season, I can tell you that probably most of what you saw in that movie is absolutely true.
I believe it. I mean, I've seen it. It's something you've seen depicted in other movies like Varsity Blues and stuff like that. I think this movie's far better.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Varsity Blues, I don't think was based on a true story. I think it was just,
it's more of a comedy than anything else.
Yeah.
But this one takes itself very seriously.
And plus, it's very much a 90s movie. Like, this directed by Peter Berg, I genuinely thought this movie had really good direction. Like, I thought it looked really good. I've actually seen a few Peter Berg movies that I actually enjoyed. This and The Rundown.
Oh, yeah,
with The Rock. It was a good movie. Good little fun action comedy.
And despite what Wally has said, I thoroughly enjoy the hell out of Battleship.
I watched Battleship and I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, like, it's terrible.
I seeing what he was able to accomplish with this movie, and then seeing why in the world would he ever want to make a movie like Battleship other than probably the buckets of money that he made. But this movie, however, I thought was really good. The score is really good, and a lot of the music is from one of the bands that I really like, Explosions in the Sky. So right away I was like, hey, that's an Explosions in the Sky song, and it's all these different Explosions in the Sky song throughout the entire movie. I thought it was genuinely pretty heartbreaking towards the end, without giving it away, like what happened.
Did you see it coming?
Not really. I wasn't familiar with the true story. You've seen things like that before in movies, but I didn't see it coming.
That gut punch is directed extremely well.
Yes, extremely well. I mean, and the only knock I would give it against it is the thing they do in most football movies that I just, every time I see it, I'm like, they always have to amplify the action. It's not just somebody making a tackle. It's like somebody like literally getting thrown like 10 feet in the air.
Right.
People like getting clotheslined. Like, you never see that happen in like any real games.
That's
like,
true.
I just wish they would.
I think the best person to fully embrace that and not even take it seriously is Oliver Stone with the
Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday.
Yeah. I don't know how much more I can say. I mean, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really accurate to like what Wally was saying too. Like, this town pretty much shuts down.
Yep.
When in the movie, at least the way it's depicted, it literally shuts down. Things close at like 5.
Yeah,
the whole town shuts
Friday.
Down for this football game.
Yeah, but
everyone goes.
The gripe that I had with it was that it didn't give you enough of, especially the coach, because it's told a lot of through the coach's eyes, you know, and it goes to a lot of the main players, you know, through their eyes and their home life.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I didn't think it gave you enough of, like, especially the coach, of how it really affected his home life. He only saw here and there how his relationship with his wife and his son, I guess. Does he have a child?
I believe he has a daughter.
Okay. You know, his family. I just didn't get that, you know.
They give you a little bit here and there, like hints at, like, he's had to move before because he was run out of town, maybe for like a losing season or something like that. And like, you get the impression that this town is very much similar because you get all these people that are really just saying just win, and almost making it seem like if you don't win, there's going to be trouble. Like, you got to win at all costs, no matter what it takes. Win is all that matters. And it gets it across. And I mean, even the kids, like, there's so much pressure put on these high school kids. And I think the movie does a really good job of displaying that. So I thought it was really good. You know, direction and just the story I thought was really interesting. So I definitely give it a yay.
That's it?
That's it.
Wally?
All right, I'm going to talk about a movie that I saw. It was on my my list of shame.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen this movie before until recently. That's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Holy fuck. Holy Jesus Christ.
Yep. I've never... And here's the kicker. I've never seen any clips of this movie.
Wow.
I've never... Not even them jumping off the cliff.
Wow.
Nothing. The only thing I know of this movie is in the textbooks I have for screenwriting.
Okay.
That movie's brought up a lot in a lot of Sid Field's screenwriting classes and in his books. Talks about it a lot. So I sat down and I watched it. Son of a bitch, this movie's awesome.
Yes, I own this movie. This movie is tremendous.
I bought it for like six... I bought a collector's edition for $6 at like Newbery Comics like a while back. And I was like, well, I got nothing to watch. I'll pop this in. And I fell in love with the movie from like the opening scene where it's like all sepia toned and they're gambling and Sundance wants to be asked to stick around just so he can leave, you know, because they say he's cheating. And some of the lines in this movie are absolutely brilliant.
Oh, they're play off of one another.
It's awesome. Yeah. And my favorite scene is the one where they blow up the train. Because I didn't think it was gonna be that funny.
Yeah, the guy inside
was like, "Hey, do you want to get blown up again?" And then they put the dynamite on. You just see him standing next to you, like, "I think that'll do it." And then the whole thing goes up, and they just get blown off their asses.
Yeah,
and they just look around and see the money just floating.
Hermano, you've seen this.
You haven't seen
Holy shit!
Oh, dude, get on the train! Get on the train!
I was hoping you wouldn't call on me. I'm like,
oh my god! And
my favorite line of the movie is where they're having lunch at a Mexican outdoor restaurant, and a bullet zings by their head, and they have to run. And I forget who delivers the line, but it's like, "But service, you know, I'm never come. This place is never getting my business again."
Yeah.
This movie is a yay all the way. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, I haven't seen it. You know, never seen it until recently, and I adore this movie. Yeah. It's a yay all the way.
It's awesome. Well, I'm glad you finally got to see it, and hopefully someday Hermano will be able to see it at least very soon. I have a couple movies to talk about. First one is from 2007, starring Vera Farmiga, called Never Forever. It's a little independent film directed by Gina Kim. Now, Hermano, in the past, you've said, you know, you're trying to go back and look at movies by directors that you really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to do that with actors that I really appreciate, especially method actors, you know. Okay. And Vera Farmiga, I think, is a very fine actress. And I really want to go back and look at some of her earlier work before she really made it kind of big. I guess in Up in the Air was her really breakout role. So this movie, you know, she stars as an American woman who begins a dangerous relationship with an attractive immigrant worker in order to save her marriage, and she finds her true self. It's a very, you know, personal story. I think I don't think either of you would even appreciate it, but I liked it only because she is the strongest part of it. And the plot that I just read from IMDb doesn't give it due justice, because really she's trying to have a child with her Korean husband, and her and his family, they live in New York City, and she feels a lot of pressure by the Korean family to have a child, and it's all the pressure is on her. They don't even put any blame on him, you know. And you know, as this strife is going on, you know, they're growing farther apart. She's at the clinic for an appointment, and she sees another Korean individual and a guy, and she pretty much stalks him, follows him to where he works and where he lives, and essentially begins up an affair and starts paying him to have sex in order to hopefully get inseminated, you know, and then the you know, it just goes from there, you know, the drama from there, you know. It's a relatively predictable story, but it's Vera Farmiga that holds this movie, and for her performance alone, I would give it a yay. Otherwise, it's just a meh story. Next, I want to talk about a short film that Wally just saw recently, Alive in Joburg.
Yeah,
and this was the idea that Neil Blomkamp had, that he was able to expand into District 9.
Yep.
Alive in Joburg, like you had said, I think last week, Wally, you talked about it, and you said that it's just a a much smaller story of District 9. However, it's really odd to see this bulky mech suits these aliens are wearing, and they just don't look anything like the technology that you saw in District 9.
Yeah.
But the what they do with that when they're fighting those two soldiers is really cool.
Yeah. So they did that with, like, almost no money.
Sure. That's, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty fantastic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The alien prosthetics, you know, are pretty clunky.
Yeah. They're not good at all.
Really just masks, and with they're all wearing like shrouds and hoods and stuff like that. It's really cool to look back at this and see what it became. You know, and the fact that you have a vision he probably had a much larger vision that he only had a limited, very limited budget and very limited time to be able to do.
So it's
a cool thing to look at, and it's I would give that a A. And that led me to go out and buy District 9 because I didn't own it.
Wow.
Until recently. And I bought the Blu-ray, and this is the first time I had seen it since we saw it in theaters.
Wow.
Yes, from 2009.
I think it's been a while since I've actually watched this, and I intrigued myself when I think about it.
So, this is definitely one of my favorite sci-fi movies of recent years. This is such a great, great story, and Charlton Copley in this is just amazing. You know, really, coming out of nowhere, nobody knew who this guy was, and he, in this movie, he's just so good because... And it's filmed in such a way and presented in such a way that this guy is a dick. He's an asshole.
Yeah, he's like your typical, I gotta follow this by the book, bureaucrat enforcer.
Right, but it's like you could tell he was bullied when he was in high school or something like that.
Yeah.
And that he just wants some sort of authority to be able to assert over people, but he doesn't have the demeanor to be able to pull that off convincingly because he gets pushed around by a lot of the SWAT team members, you know? But the movie does a great job in the way it's structured of having you sympathize with him as the movie goes along because he's an unsympathetic character in the beginning of the movie.
That's right.
And it's also interesting in the structure wise how it starts off almost entirely as a found footage documentary.
Yeah, it's like the cam from the SWAT team guys.
But then it just almost abandons that, you know, and only keeps traces of that about halfway through the movie and on. But in any lesser movie, it would not work. But for some reason, it works in this film. Probably just because it's an original story, it's so well told, it's well acted, and the technology, the alien technology they introduce in this is so fucking amazing. You know, the guns and the type of power that they have and the different things that they can pull off and it's also really cool too how it really isn't an origin story. They give you a little bit of backstory of how it all started and it's just like you're right there.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't need a lot of they give you all that exposition in the beginning. You don't need a lot of that as it goes on because you already know that
there's aliens here,
and it's so seamless, you know, that the aliens are there, and as we may talk about later on, Blomkamp does not hide his what the meaning of the story is.
Yeah.
You know, the agenda is very clear. And once again, like I said, in any lesser movie it might be annoying, but this movie it just works. Even though the agenda, you know, much like WALL-E, the agenda is extremely clear and right in your face, but it works. You know,
yeah.
This is the same thing. So obviously, I would give this a yay. This is actually one of my favorite movies. All right, now I just want to talk about our YouTube page.
We have a YouTube page.
That's right.
Wait, what's YouTube?
Oh, we're not going to start this again. We are adding more content as we speak. So if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you'll be able to see, you know, behind the show content, in show content, some extras that I think all three of us will be sharing as time goes by. It's just another way to enjoy the show. Once again, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers. Subscribe and give us some reviews.
Sit back, relax, watch.
That's right. All right, now it is time for Trailer Hitches. Uh, This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. I will go first. I will talk about the trailer for The Monuments Men. I think I saw this before Elysium. And I was really struck by the cast as the trailer was going along. You know, Matt Damon, George Clooney, Kate Blanchett, Bill Murray, John Goodman, Jean Dujardin, and Bob Balaban. As soon as I saw Bill Murray and Bob Balaban, I'm like, is this the new Wes Anderson movie? But no, it's a movie directed by George Clooney. And it's, you know, it's funny. It's actually seems very similar to a movie that I just watched from 1964 and I just talked about called The Train. The plot is in a race against time, a crew of art historians and museum curators unite to recover renowned works of art stolen by Nazis before Hitler destroys them. And you know, these you know, based on true story events from World War II movies always hit close to home for me. I love those kind of movies. And it looks like, you know, maybe Clooney might be taking a little bit of his experience from Soderbergh on the Ocean's movies and putting it here, you know, and, you know, there's levity involved, of course, with... in the trailer, it's like Bill Murray doesn't even say a word, I don't think.
He just drives by in a Jeep.
Yeah. but, I mean, the cast is insane. So many great actors, and it just looks like a really... cool.
It's going to be a fun movie to watch.
Really fun, cool, you know, action heist buddy flick, I guess. Although it's coming in the middle of December, so I guess Clooney and the production crew are kind of positioning it for an Oscar movie. But then again, you saw Argo last year, and that's pretty much like what the tone of this movie looks like. Yeah. It has too, you know. So I mean, I'm hitching my wagon to this one. I'll let Hermano go next.
All right, the trailer I watched was for the newest Hayao Miyazaki film called The Wind Rises. The synopsis is a look at the life of Hiro Horikoshi, the man who designed Japanese fighter planes during World War II. I noticed right away the tone of this trailer was a little different from recent Miyazaki films, where a lot of his more recent films have been kind of like fantasy. Most of his films are fantasy. This one is, because it's based on a true story, looks much more like a drama with maybe some romantic elements. So that threw me off a little bit, but what brought me right back in is the amazing animation. I'm a huge fan of his animation style, because I've been watching his movies since I was younger. I was a young kid and stuff like that, so I always just gravitate to his animation style. It always has like that feel of like just like childlike wonder and stuff like that. I don't know what it is about it. I think it's just the simplicity, but also just how great he makes landscapes and like backdrops look. And the characters always just look a little bit off from the world, how realistic the world looks, but the characters look a little bit off usually. And I love that. The trailer's not a conventional trailer. It's not really a story trailer. It's more of like a bunch of scenes strung together. So I was just like mouth agape, just looking at how beautiful like everything looked. It definitely looks a little bit darker than... he does have like some, you know, fairly dark elements in some of his other movies, but they're always based in fantasy. This one kind of... I got a little bit of a Grave of the Fireflies vibe from it. So I was like, ooh... Like, I want to see it, and at the same time, I got to prepare myself before I go see it, because I'm like, it might show me something heartbreaking like Grave of the Fireflies. So I think it looks fantastic. I'm a huge fan. If you're a fan of Miyazaki, it's a must-see, so definitely hitch into The Wind Rises.
And from the fuck department comes my trailer, The Family. I have to make sure that I saw this right. I only saw the trailer before Elysium. Looks like it's directed by Martin Scorsese.
No.
All right.
Luc Besson.
Luc Besson's this written, but it's Scorsese is behind this movie too.
Well, his name appears on the trailer. Attached his name to it.
So it's got Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer in it. So if I gave you this as an equation, you'd be like, "Well, this could be interesting." This movie looks ridiculously bad. It's Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer. They're a family on the run from the mob, and they're in witness protection, and they keep doing shit to fuck it up for themselves. If they keep moving, so they move to France. So what better way to get away from the mob than to go where the Mediterranean Ocean is, which is not that far from Italy? So, yeah, there's that. And you got the guy who gave me Taken and La Femme Nikita.
Here's the IMDb synopsis. The Manzoni family, a notorious mafia clan, is relocated to Normandy, France, under the Witness Protection Program. Where fitting in soon becomes challenging as their old habits die hard.
Yeah, there's like a scene where Michelle Pfeiffer blows up a convenience store because someone calls her a stupid American.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there going, why would these guys come anywhere near? This movie looks so stupid. This is... I don't understand. I,
now,
please.
What's the tone? Like action comedy?
It's like action comedy.
That's
it's
exactly
like,
what it says.
There's a scene where like apparently a plumber shows up at the house and like Robert De Niro beat the fuck out of him at one point. So he's like tied up somewhere. He's like, I didn't kill the plumber. He's like, I didn't kill the plumber. You see the plumber like it's like a cut scene of like the plumber like tied to a pipe. He's all black and was like, he's like, no, I'm still alive. this movie with these names attached, I'm like, what the hell? This is obviously a bitch and just a someone please explain this to me because this was the weirdest thing that I've seen all week.
Wow. All right. Guys, I just wanted to mention that we have merchandise available to purchase now.
Merchandise.
Thanks, Wally.
You're welcome.
Yes, you can get t-shirts and more if you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. In the future, I think you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it.
Anything.
Awesome.
From t-shirts to vibrators.
Oh, Jesus.
Gross.
Thanks, love. So please show your support for the show by visiting Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers and find an item that you will be proud to wear.
That's enough.
Once again, that is Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. All right, let's get into our discussion of Elysium.
What did you do to me?
Gave you a way out. Whoever has this has the power to override their whole system.
She's very sick, Max. We need to get her up there.
You can save everyone.
When can I go?
Set in the year 2154, where the very wealthy live on a man-made space station while the rest of the population resides on a ruined Earth, a man takes on a mission that could bring equality to the polarized worlds. The director, Neil Blomkamp. The actors, Matt Damon, Jodie Foster, and Charlton Copley. Hermano.
Sir.
I think whenever a director has a strong debut film, we typically look forward to their follow-up. Do you think that Blomkamp delivered in a sophomore debut, or did you see a second-season slump?
I'm kind of leaning towards the second season slump. I think the perfect word for me to describe this movie would be underwhelmed. I was, like Tim, I think Wally, like a really, really huge fan of District 9. I thought that movie came out of nowhere. There was no hype leading up to it. I just came out of nowhere. It reminded me of the first time I saw The Matrix.
Yeah.
And I had heard nothing about The Matrix, and it just kind of came out of nowhere, and it blew me away. Same thing with District 9. Came out of nowhere. I thought it was fantastic, and I was really looking forward to his next movie. I watched it this past Saturday. Right away, it starts with something that I don't like that when that movies do usually, which is they explain everything in kind of like a text crawl on the screen. And I thought that was such a poor way of trying to build the world. Where in District 9, it's all these, like, interviews and, like, the documentary style Tim mentioned.
News footage.
And news footage of, like, everything that's been going on. And you get in, like, first-hand accounts of, like, you know, what happened to these aliens and how they just showed up one day and what's been going on and how people respond to them and all that stuff. And I thought it was a great way to kind of build, like, the situation and the circumstances that are going on in the movie. And then dropping that documentary style and just going right into the movie. In this one, you get a couple paragraphs of rich people are in space, poor people are on Earth, go. And I'm like, that's it? Like, all right. I was still in at that point. I was like, though, I don't really like when movies do that. I like the first third of the movie. As the movie went along, I found myself just getting more and more just like so many questions just like popping into my head. Like, why did that happen? Why don't they just do this? I felt like there was a better way to handle everything. Like, I could have been the president in this movie and just been like, it would have been so much better. But, I don't know, overall, I just thought the movie felt kind of dumb compared to District 9. And I can't help but constantly compare it to District 9 because that's the only other movie that I've seen that he's done. And I thought that movie was so good, and for this one, I just felt kind of meh.
Really?
I don't like this movie at all. This movie is about as subtle as a punch to the face.
Well, District 9 wasn't very subtle either.
Yeah, this movie is even worse.
I think this movie is far worse.
This movie just, from the get-go, they start beating you over the head with the theme, like, look at this! We want you to think about this! Look at that! And, there's a lot of stupidity in this movie that I just couldn't abide by. Certain things that you'd expect, like, in a sci-fi movie, especially when you have something like a flying space station. Like, one of the problems with the flying space station has no defensive capabilities whatsoever. You're out in space. There's rocks out there. You know, like, even in something like Starship Troopers, they had, like, those at least, like, somewhat of a defense system when they're in their space stations that would blow up asteroids as they came close. Like, Elysium has nothing. Like, you can take Elysium down pretty easily if you really wanted to. And the fact that they have to rely on things on Earth to protect just starting from there, I could go on and on. But I don't want to accidentally delve into any spoiler territory. My other big problem, too, is when you have someone, like, who's got a fairly recognizable face like Charlton Copley, and you have him as your protagonist in one movie, and you have him as an antagonist in the other movie, it is very jarring to try to, especially for people who would, like, maybe just seen District 9, to see, like, oh, why is he a bad guy now? Like, they should have cast someone else.
Really?
Yes, they should have cast someone else.
I could not disagree with you more on that one.
For the villain in this, because though he does a good job of being a villain,
I still see the
character from the first movie just with a beard.
Like, wow.
They didn't really do enough to disguise his face. It's just, the whole time I'm sitting there watching this, and I almost felt like I was watching that on split screen. Like, seeing District 9 in my mind's eye while I'm watching this.
Wow, I could not disagree with you more on that aspect, because I think he is a completely and utterly different character who even looks, obviously he acts different, but looks completely different too. I did not see any similarity. I saw a bumbling fool in the first one, and I saw a completely confident, badass,
mercenary
was, his sole mission was vengeance, essentially, in the second half of this movie. Now, I kind of agree with you guys in the fact that it's not nearly as good as District 9. I think it's a fine follow-up. It does have a number of missteps, especially in the, like you said, Hermano, maybe the last third. And you complained about the not-so-subtle nature of the movie, and that didn't really bother me, as long as the world that you're building is strong enough to convince me to continue on faithfully through the movie, and it did. However, it did leave me wanting a little bit more. I wish, you talk about Hermano in the opening text, and that's really where I got concerned. I was like, oh shit, you know.
Even before that, like, I went before, just real quick, like, before going into the movie, I remember seeing that it was only an hour and 37 minutes. And I don't know, right away that struck me as a concern, and I'm not sure why. Like, because I think District 9 was, what, close to 2 hours?
Yeah, I don't know.
And this movie was an hour and 37 minutes, and I'm like, well, it's either going to be really nice and tightly packed, or they're going to speed through everything and not give you much explanation. And that's, I think, where it ended up losing me.
Yeah, District 9 was just under 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I just wish I got a little bit more of the world of Earth, essentially, because all they focused on was Los Angeles.
Yep.
And it's funny, reading on the trivia on this, they filmed in two locations, in Vancouver and Mexico City, and which is interesting to me, because I could have sworn, I was like, they probably filmed in South Africa again, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just interesting, maybe the studio required him this time to
you go with the tax breaks guy.
Yeah. I wish I just got a little bit more of Earth, you know, more than Los Angeles. What does the rest of Earth look like? Does it look exactly like this landscape that you see? Because it was pretty dull and boring, you know? Mm-hmm. however believable for that setting.
It felt very claustrophobic. It always felt like you were just in his neighborhood.
Or on Elysium. And once you get to Elysium, I wish you got a little bit more. You see, like, one or two houses.
Yeah, you see very little of the actual Elysium.
And you don't really see what the daily life on Elysium is like, exactly. other than people lounging by the pool and going to get cancer taken out of them.
Exactly.
You know?
You literally know zero about Elysium, except that's where the rich people are. That's all you get to know about Elysium.
But still, everything else around this movie, I think, is so strong that it was able to, you know, convince me to go along, except for one part. And it's the worst part of this movie, and that is Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster is by far the worst part of this movie. What accent she's going for, I don't know.
I think she's going for an Afrikaans accent.
But she has a French last name. I think she's French. But either way, there's no reason why she needs to have that affect to her voice.
Because she says something, I think, almost in Dutch when she's walking past William Fichtner at one point in the movie.
Plus, she is the most one-note character in this movie.
Absolutely.
And she is just pure bad, and that's it. There's no reason to why she's so bad and why she's so power hungry. That's it. You know, she's just bad.
You just never really get to know pretty much any of the characters that well. I mean, maybe Matt Damon a little bit because you get some flashbacks of when he was a kid. But Jodie Foster, you just meet her. She's just bad. You never know why. Why is she such a bitch?
Because she disagrees with the president. She feels that the president should be doing more.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally
it. She hates Earth.
You don't really know Charlton Copley's character either. He's just a grunt for her, I guess.
Yeah, like, but for that, I don't really need it, you know, as much explanation for him mm-hmm. as I do for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's really just a tool for her that obviously goes off the rails.
Yep.
But I will have to say it's a beautiful looking movie. I think it's filmed very well. There are some action scenes in which the camera is almost looks like it's attached to the back of the, I'm going to say, Matt Damon at one point, where he's like scanning a landscape and it just follows him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some shots in here I've never seen before. And especially during an action scene where he is battling some police cops, police robots. And there's a slow-mo shot of one of the robots exploding. Beautiful.
Yeah, that looks
gorgeous.
Fantastic.
Yes. This movie is, the technology, once again, like in District 9,
yeah,
shows some very original things.
I love Neil Blomkamp technology because mm-hmm. it looks new enough, but at the same time, it doesn't look so new that, like, it would take you out of it. No one's wearing skin-tight battle suits
right.
that have, like, you know, full, like, it doesn't look anything like Star Trek, where they have, like, the jumpsuits that they can jump out of the Enterprise and all that stuff. It's hydraulics that are bolted to your
bones.
Everything
looks realistic,
you know,
worn in, lived in.
Yeah, the robots have, they move like humans, but
yeah.
they have these really weird bodies with camera heads.
It took me a while to notice. I'm like, wait a minute, are those people in suits or are they robots? I'm like, wow, they're robots. That's amazing. Yeah, the effects in this movie are very fluid and very natural.
Some of the shots that he chooses, you know, for this, I thought were pretty cool. I like the design of the mercenary ship. That was pretty cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
Even the UAVs were drone-ish, but they didn't even look like what we have for drones now. They're circles with four, you know, propellers and a camera that just fly around.
Yeah,
they reminded me of the drones from They Live.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah,
yeah, they look like the circular, or those little vacuums that people use.
The Robovacs,
they look kind of like those.
However, I will say that John Connor's ATM hacking machine hasn't evolved that much, has it?
No. Nope.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I think I like this movie. You know, there's like two different themes that they're going for: an immigration parallel and
Medicare.
And the healthcare reform. So I mean. And when they try to juggle that at certain times, it's a little bit clunky, you know. Overall, I did. You know, one thing that struck me was the idea of Elysium and like the artificial atmosphere, like where it's not like they have to enter through a port or something like that.
It's just wide open.
Yeah, it's just wide open. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. You know, it's just
Once again, you don't know, like, how is this possible? Like,
yeah,
you don't get to know anything about this place. Like, it's just like, it just looks like a sheriff's badge floating in space. That's all you know about it. And I agree with you guys. Like, the visuals, amazing. Some of the action set pieces, how they kind of lead from one to the other to the next. I thought were pretty fantastic, the way they were paced. But there was so much dumb stuff in this movie. Like, you guys ever hear that, like, when you go back and watch movies, like, from the 80s, or a time before, like, technology existed, like cell phones and computers were, like, prevalent in most homes. Like, you'll go back and watch a movie in the 80s, and you'll be like, this whole premise of this movie could literally have been solved if cell phones existed.
Yeah, exactly. Or,
like, if this person had a computer, this movie would have been, like, a five-minute movie. There's something that happens in this movie that I thought, if you guys literally just did this, this movie would not exist.
Hmm.
Like, the world would be, Elysium would be totally fine. People on Earth would still be living in squalor, but at least they wouldn't be going after Elysium so hard. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. I don't know if it's a potential spoiler or not, so I won't.
Well, speaking of that, then let's get into spoilers.
Yeah, let's go to spoilers.
The only thing these people want, I mean, they depict it twice in the movie, is to go and get this medical
technology. The cancer machine.
That pretty much doesn't seem like there's any shortage of them. You literally could have just given them machines, put them down on Earth, and you wouldn't have to worry about anything. These people never give you the thought that they just want to live on Elysium. They just want to cure kids that are dying or ailments that they have. That's literally all they want. Like, why push them away so hard? Like, why not just
maybe it
give
costs
them
too much?
This, you know? It doesn't seem like it does, though. Like, these people walk in for 5 seconds and get healed.
They're rich. They're rich. Maybe it costs too much.
I don't know.
Even cost effective. It's like you have a guy who runs a factory where you could just have factory workers. If they get hurt or, you know, critically injured, just
like Matt Damon does.
Yeah.
Just fix them right up and send them back to work.
And back to work. Like, you gotta make money. Like, his arm could have been fixed in, like, 2 minutes.
You're injecting too much logic.
That really was really, really painful and hard for me to get by. Like, I just could not get by the fact that they could have just literally gave him these medical bays. And at the end of the movie, they send out fucking helicopters, ships full of these fucking things.
Exactly.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? They just had him in a little warehouse just waiting. I'm like, are you kidding me? Just give it to him, dude.
Exactly.
Instead, you'd rather shoot him down and shit like that? Or have ships crash into your fucking space station?
Yeah, speaking of the space, crashing the space station, so the team that Matt Damon goes in with on that ship, it shows it when they're going towards Elysium, they show the monitors on Elysium saying, warning, unauthorized ship approaching, right? Okay. And then it just cuts to them landing with no problem. There's no, it's like, that goes to your point, Wally, about you don't have any defenses on this ship?
None. Yeah, absolutely none.
So why
you have a very fragile atmosphere you need to keep in place.
So why even bother cutting back to that scene of showing the computer saying, warning, unauthorized ship approaching? What does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Well, even then, like, in the opening scene, the ship lands, and there's, like, swarms of robots coming out of nowhere and helicopters, like, you know, arresting everybody. And this, like, they land, everyone gets out, and they're like, he just goes, keep him busy. And then the guy flies off again.
Also, you know, they present by the end Matt Damon's character as a Christ figure, you know, sacrificing himself. So, but I mean, I don't think there was enough leading up throughout the movie of something like this weighing on him, like him realizing that he is a hope for these people.
They keep showing you the nun. You're going to do something big one of these
days. Yeah, but you're right. That's flashing back, but It wasn't enough of him struggling with this this weight, essentially, you know, that he could possibly be someone to help these poor people out.
Why can't they put him in a freaking fix-it box and make him better?
The other thing that
put him in a fix-it box,
but he died.
So did friggin' Charlton Copley.
No, his brain was still alive.
If you can fix a grenade face, you can fix a Matt Damon.
The character is like, there's no coming back from this. Like, this is literally going to kill you.
Yeah, that was one thing, though, was they show Charlton Copley's face getting annihilated, you know, and then he's on the table just getting healed, and I'm like, wait a minute, isn't he dead? And they just throw in this line and say, no, his brain is still active.
Because it's been hours, or at least minutes.
Yeah.
At the very least, precious minutes.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that's like a stretch.
Now I'll put him on there, we'll reconstruct the whole thing. It's like, whoa, he's going to be pissed when he wakes up now.
But the fact that he was such a badass kind of let me get the slide that
way. No, not even. Then he's like, I'm back and I'm crazy. I'm taking over this bitch.
Did you guys notice, too, that when they reconstructed his face, like, he didn't have the scars anymore, or he looked younger? Like, he looked younger to me. Like, his beard they looked shorter, too. Like, it reconstructed his beard. Oh, maybe. I was like, awesome. Yeah. So if I shave, I could just go in this machine, and it'll put my beard back on. I thought it was pretty cheesy, the whole flashback to the stuff that, when Matt Damon was a kid, and him talking to the nun and all that stuff, and flashing back to that. And he kind of seemed like a douche at first, and he doesn't change his mind about wanting to save anything other than just himself.
Because Romano, I want to tell you a story.
What's up?
I want to tell you a story. One time there was a meerkat, and it had a hippopotamus, and a meerkat.
And a hippopotamus.
A hippopotamus.
And a meerkat. A meerkat and a hippopotamus.
Jeez, I almost forgot about that. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, oh yeah, the little girl.
See, that I think all this structure here is where it suffered from not having that all that set up in the beginning of the movie. You know, much like District 9 did, or any other movie where it sets up everything you need to know in the beginning and it doesn't flash back, you know.
Yeah.
It trusts the audience to be able to follow along. Yes. Yes.
And also, there's, I think, a few lines where, like, people in Matt Damon's neighborhood are like, what happened to you, man? You used to be a legend. But you never really...
Legend of what?
Exactly. He was a car thief, as far as I know. Yeah. I'm like, you're a legendary car thief?
He is the Nick Cage of 21... 21
apparently.
He is gone in 60 seconds.
And, like, I don't know, everyone's treating him as such, like, a badass or, like, this big-time guy. And I'm like, I never got that. Like, until he gets the little exo suit, I thought he was just a very average Joe guy. Like, he wouldn't have accomplished anything without that suit.
Then you've got the... Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, he's supposed to be Hispanic. I'm like, no, he's Da Costa. He's Portuguese. he's a Portuguese hero.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, the whole, you know, race element or...
Oh, that's,
you know,
that's terrible for me.
No, it didn't bother me because it's very realistic that everything is even more of a melting pot by this point, you know, with you know, who knows what the Earth is, you know, what the boundaries of Earth are like, you know.
It's not really a melting pot. Almost everybody's Hispanic. And then you have your guy who's going to lead the revolution who looks just like Che Guevara. Spider looks just like Che Guevara.
That's an interesting point.
You know what I mean? And citizenship for everybody. That's what we're talking about these days, right? That's the hot topic with the whole Obama thing, giving, you know, everyone citizenship. Let's do it in the future!
Yeah, I didn't care for Matt Damon's last name. The first two letters were okay, but next five, gotta go. Oh. It was like a combination of mine and Tim's last name.
And then I get problems like with other things that just happen in the movie, like... The part where Matt Damon is first fighting Charlton Copley, and they're fighting, and he stabs him with a knife, and he's getting ready to behead him. Then, you know, Matt Damon grabs the gun, energy shield, not hurting me. Sorry. Yeah. It's like when you're playing, like when you were a little kid, and there was that one douchebag kid that's like, I got you, like, force fields.
I didn't have a problem with that.
They
at
do
all.
It twice. They never looked at anybody ever having force fields, but I could see this one part is just ridiculous. You know what I mean? This is like, all right, I'm like, there's the gun with like the really cool, awesome exploding bullets. You can take this bad guy out now and see where this goes. And he shoots at him. The first thing he does is force fields. And then later on, Matt Damon has a better weapon to shoot at him with. Force fields again!
He used that exploding bullet gun on the robot. Yeah, but then he lost it or something like that in the midst of battle.
But so he gets it back.
No, he had another gun. It was another gun.
Yeah, but it had the exploding bullets.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did, because you see the explode. There's a shot of the explosion go boom, boom, boom,
oh,
boom,
and it
boom.
Hits a guy that's running around the corner.
And you see Charlton Copley with that little force field hiding behind it. And then later on, when Matt Damon upgrades his gun again, he's like, I got a better gun now that shoots even bigger bullets. Charlton Copley has a bigger force field. Because I got the new suit. Look, I got a better force field now. Improved. Can't get me.
Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No, I mean, I just left the theater, like, instantly feeling kind of, like, let down. And
hey, do you think some of that has to do with your... How good you thought District 9 was and what your expectations
were? But my expectations were not like sky high for this movie. Like, I love District 9. I know that this wasn't like a sequel or anything. It was its own standalone movie. So, I mean, I think you were the most high on this movie of all three of us.
Yeah.
I didn't have huge expectations, and even it didn't really meet, you know, my middle expectations. So I left the theater, and right away I was just kind of like, meh.
Okay, so we asked Twitter for their reactions. We only got three responses, but Clayton Walker at SCHMVNGPCTRS
Wow.
He says, the most elaborate Obamacare commercial I've ever seen.
So not the only one then.
Cameron Carpenter at Lumetian, a visual sister to District 9, weaker on almost everything else, but better than most summer films out today.
I would agree there. I mean, even as much as I was let down, I still think it's better than most of the movies I've seen this year.
And friend of the show, Andrew Johnson, at Writer Andrew. Not a great movie, but I enjoyed Damon's performance as the hippo. Or was he the meerkat? do you guys want to get into grades now?
Let's get into grades.
Wally?
D, F, and minus.
D minus?
Yes. Wow. This movie really did not do it for me.
So, another movie you've rated lower than Barbarella.
Yes, another movie I rated lower than Barbarella. I give District 9 an A+. This movie is just a failure on almost every single level I could think of.
Wow, that's pretty harsh.
I would not be that harsh.
And the only thing that keeps from being an F is the fact that there are periodic cool moments. But periodic cool moments do not a movie make.
Hermano?
C+.
C+, and I would give it a B+. So that sounds like around a C average. Well, no, maybe... Well, yeah, like a C average.
C average.
Well, that's a shame. For me, at least. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And one thing we would like you all to do is please leave a review on iTunes.
Yes, please.
You can download our episodes on iTunes, and when you leave a review, we will read it immediately. We'll even read it on air, because any feedback is greatly, greatly appreciated.
And it actually helps us, because the more positive you get, the further up in the iTunes screen we get to be.
There you go. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing Hermano's most anticipated movie of the year, Only God Forgives.
That is the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch. Alrighty. How are we sounding so far?
What are we doing first?
Elysium.
Elysium, yeah, that's the more recent one. Probably got like a bit of a reputation and jokes go over my head, like about that whole Rock of Ages thing on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, why the hell would I get mentioned in Rock of Ages?
I know, I was just teasing because the guy that had mentioned it as being his number one film of the year.
Yeah, that's...
You know, it was more like he just had a blast with it, and that's why he chose it. And I said, oh, you should listen to our podcast, because you might like the opinions of Walter Benjamin.
So I was like, for some reason I didn't register that you had said that. So I was like, I think you might have me confused with Tim here. I don't do musicals. And like, it was a joke. Oh, boy, do I feel dense.
That's why I try to avoid jumping into conversations like that you had started or whatever. You know?
Oh, Hiram and I were going back and forth over reality shows. And somebody said, like, amen. I have no idea who it was, like, the Real Housewives of the CSRA.
Right.
I have no idea what the hell CSRA is.
Yeah, who knows?
But I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I feel like it has something to do with doctors, because they were like, amen!
Yeah.